Greetings, everybody. I'm James Gillen, your host with As You Wish Talk Radio on BBC and eCity Stargate on Rumble, Telegram, X. It's all over the place. So eCity TV. Did I say VMO? I don't know if I said that or not, but you can find us just about anywhere. We've got a great show. Tonight, we're going to have a guest that's written a beautiful book on ancient Hawaiian history. And being that I am in Hawaii right now, I thought it'd be great to bring him on. But first, the news. And it looks like Biden's Democrats are seizing the moment by accusing the Republicans of seizing the moment. It's pretty much what they do. It's concerning the brutal death of Lincoln Riley. A name the president couldn't even put his ice cream cone down to mention. So, you know, the bottom line, you know, as they're saying on the news, the blood is on his hands, along with his open border Democrats and rhinos. You know, it's sad because illegal aliens have been looting, carjacking, raping, recently killed a two-year-old boy. They're beating up cops, shot cops, and they're just brutally raping and killing young girls. And, you know, the Dems' open border policy sponsors child and sex trafficking, drug trafficking, gang activity, the crime epidemic, and runaway taxes to pay for it all. And the blood's just not on Biden's hands. It's on the hands of the Dems and the rhinos that are keeping the borders open. So why? We have to ask that question. Why on earth would anybody want to keep the borders open? And that's the question no one is asking. You know, what is their agenda? Whose back pocket are they in? You know, only when you understand the globalist take down America plan and their quest for a global domination will any of this make sense. So just follow the money. These corrupt politicians serve the globalists and the cartels, basically. There's no other explanation. So, you know, the Soros-backed DAs will not prosecute hardened, dangerous criminals, and they put them right back on the streets. It's all by design. So anyway, we have to start using a little common sense here. The lawfare the Democrats are engaging in to stop Trump, who'd put an end to all of this, is costing taxpayers millions. DAs are cashing in. The security costs are in the millions to protect these high-profile kangaroo courts, all taken out of the taxpayers' pocket. Truckers are demonstrated against the Trump injustice. Deliveries are not being made. Shelves are bare. Businesses are leaving with major chains like Macy's packing it up. They can't afford the theft and looting. They're just done. So great job, Hochul. And should say Hochul. And your TDS Soros-backed DAs and politicians, you killed New York, not by incompetence, by design, the design of your handlers. So just like San Francisco, LA, and Chicago, wait till they find out why the shelves are bare, the economy's in the toilet, and the crime is through the roof. The people are waking up, and the days of accountability are coming. Putin, in a press conference, tells gays, adults, that, you know, they can live and let live, but children are off limits. So the more he speaks, the more people are starting to really like him. You know, his move to denazify Russia, in the corruption, the race wars against Russian-speaking people, in child and sex trafficking, rid the land of weaponized biolabs, you know, is being noted. And people are starting to do their own research now. So unlike the Dems and rhinos and left lamestream press, which seems to support all the above. So it's time for Americans to pay attention to what is really happening in Ukraine, as well as the sequence of events that started the war. It's not what we've been told. Historically, neocons and NATO were the aggressors. So research that one, folks. You got to do your own research on this, because what you've been told through the news is not true at all. And I can hear everybody say, you know, they're going to blame me like everybody else that I'm a Russian disinformation. No, I'm a truth seeker and I do research. And that's all anybody has to do. So in New York, there was a communist revolution march. Maybe the illegal and legal aliens that came from communistic countries might want to do a counter march. Looks like the truckers have that covered. Again, Governor Hochul has threatened the truckers with arrests, freezing their bank accounts, and other harsh, unlawful measures following in the steps of Trudeau. Trudeau and his administration have been sued and lost in court. Now they have to compensate the people for their heavy-handedness against the Canadian truckers. Good thing Biden is in office. I'm sure he'll handle the situation if the stairs don't kill him right after he finds where he left his ice cream cone. It's a really sad comedy right now. It's so sad it's laughable, but it's not getting laughable anymore. It's just beyond ridiculous. But anyway, speaking of Canada, Justice Minister Arif Virani has defended a new power in the online harms bill to impose house arrest on anyone who is feared to commit a hate crime in the future, even if they've never done so. The police show up, put an ankle bracelet on you, and you're confined to house arrest. Well, Arif, in America, we hate people like you, and which is a crime in your country, so you might as well close your borders and go broke. So I wonder when they're going to start doing the Nazi salute over in Canada. They're really close. And I don't know if you heard about it, the real name of Canada is actually CND. It's CANADA. So some people aren't going to get that one. That's okay. Anyway, New York has already become a Marxist banana republic, as San Francisco, LA, and most Democratic-controlled states. Again, this is all by design, fueled by the global elite's Take Down America plan. America's freedom and constitution stands in the way of their world domination, and 90% population reduction agenda kind of makes the marchers for communism look like total idiots participating in their own enslavement and eventual demise. They should keep marching all the way to Venezuela, China, and North Korea. And and by the way, they're all paid to do this. So follow the money again. You'll find out what that's about. Here's a good one. Allegedly, an assassin who was hired by Zelensky's government to kill Tucker Carlson was apprehended and made a full confession. More details to that story coming up. Of course, the FBI and DOJ is hot on the trail. Not. Biden is still misquoting forefathers, falling on stairs, and refused the cognitive test during his physical. According to his physicians, he's in tip-top shape, ready to run America 4 more years, which means he is spry enough to be convicted for all of his crimes, including the Hur report, which said he broke several laws concerning illegally having classified documents strewn out all across the country. In the Hur report, they said they're not going to prosecute him because he was a dawdling old man who couldn't remember anything. So which is it? You can't have it both ways. He's either should be prosecuted if they're saying he's fit and fit as a fiddle and cognitive, and or he's a dawdling old man and should be removed. You can't have your cake and eat it too. I'm sorry. We need to look at this. Anyway, I love Candace Owens. She blew the whistle on George Soros, the man behind the DAs that are prosecuting Trump and releasing hardened criminals back on the streets. Soros groups spent $40 million to elect 75 progressive prosecutors. This is not anti-Semitic because Soros has made it clear he detests Israel. And as a boy, he worked for his Nazi godfather, taking possessions away from the Jews who were sent to concentration camps. So he's made it very clear his greatest achievement will be taking down America. Soros also paid for and backed Antifa, BLM. His open border group has financed the journey and illegal entry of illegal aliens. And now, color me stupid, but that sounds like an enemy of the state, along with all who he is financing to do his bidding. So those doing his bidding are guilty of betraying their oath, their country, and the big T, treason. So this is why they're all so threatened and adamant about removing Trump. He has it all. He has all the evidence and he knows where all the bodies are buried. So, anyway, also a correction from the last show, the two weapons used to annihilate Chile, which is where the video was taken, we aired, was mistakenly referred to as Mexico. The footage was sent to us with no information and the people were speaking Spanish. So that was my bad. The old assumed thing. I assumed it was Mexico. So, because they already attacked some other places there in Mexico. But, the old saying, don't assume, it makes an ass out of you and me. Anyway, Chile is Lahaina 2.0, along with Turkey, which is the same amount of devastation defying all the laws of physics. Take a break. Got a black helicopter coming over. Right during the show. Go figure. Okay. Anyway, the question most people are asking is if the White Hats are in charge, why are these new weapons attacks and chemtrails allowed to happen? Someone needs to up their game, find out where these weapons are be housed and who's deploying them. Ferret out all officials involved in clearing the way for the new smart cities. They're the ones attending the WEF meetings if you need a clue. So check out your governors and if they're meeting at these and officials, agency officials, if they're going to these World Economic Forum meetings, that they're part of the problem. So more to that story later. When you add the chemtrails, what they call, a slow or soft kill due to heavy metal poisoning, the chloroquat in the food, and then add C-19 bioweapon along with an either safe or effective vaccines created by the billionaire eugenicists, the open border to unvetted hardened criminals and terrorists, along with the fast-acting new weapons, I'd swear someone is trying to reduce the population. Now, why would anyone do that? Oh, wait, they told us they're going to do it. It's written in stone on the Georgia Guidestones. So don't expect Dems or rhinos, the just us system, or the politically correct dress wearing Air Force to stop it. It seems they're all complicit. So basically, we need to rise up, as people, and just say put an end to this. And hopefully, when Trump comes into office, he'll do the same thing. All right, we're going to shift gears here right now, and we're going to move over and bring in our guest. So give us just a minute. Okay, now we're good. Think we're good. All righty. All right, my guest here is Mike Taylor, and Mike and I have been working to restore this property, which was totally taken over by the jungle, and a lot of hard labor and getting rid of all the vines and weeds, and now we've got a beautiful, what about almost 1,000 plants or 900 plant coffee plants, and we've got mac nuts here and everything, so we're ready to
Getting
get this
there.
out. Yeah, it's getting there. A lot of hard work, but. He wrote this book, Malama Ko
Aloha.
Aloha, and it covers the history, the Hawaiian history, and he's got some amazing stories in here about the wars and between the loyalists and the royals and the
Royalists
loyalists,
and the traditionalists.
traditionalists, and so it's amazing, this book, and he's got a great voice when he reads it. Maybe I'll have him read a part of this book to you. But anyway, before we start, I want to just go ahead and ask you what inspired you to write this book?
Well, that's a good question. I mostly write westerns, and I've been living here for over 40 years now on this island. And I figured, maybe it's time I should write something about this island, as my kuleana, as my responsibility. And so I started writing. I had an idea of a completely different story, and then the one I ended up writing, which is par for the course. And because I don't work on outlines or anything, I'm a free writer. I just have an idea and I just go with it and let the characters drive the story and try to type as fast as I can and stay out of their way, basically. That's what I try to do. But
It's almost like automatic writing,
exactly,
almost. Yeah.
it just comes channeling through. I have no idea what's going to happen, and it just happens. So
I know Paley and the elders are really happy with you for
yeah, I hope
actually
so.
preserving their stories and their information.
Because
It's like,
there's a lot of things in here that when I started researching, it evolved into a different story, a whole different idea. And so I wanted to tell the story from a family that lives in Napapo, and it's a story that's handed down from the grandmother to her daughter to the daughter and on down. And it follows this family through May of 1819 on the deathbed of King Kamehameha the Great in Kamakahonu in Kailua, Kona side, and it goes to 18 or it goes to 1902, I believe. So all the through the generation, and I don't get involved with the politics so much, because I have to stay neutral. I can't take sides, which is the hardest part of writing this story. But I do talk about the effects of government decisions and things that happen, how it affects the common people,
Yeah.
And so that's how
One,
I feel
yeah.
about it.
A lot of I know a lot of the traditions, like in Hawaii, the aloha is written into law, and they have the aloha spirit, and then they talk about the ohana, you know, the family and the kiki and the children and all that stuff. It's like, and the tradition is you know, it's basically all about taking care of the family and taking care of each other, and it's an extended family. It's not just, you know, your biological family.
Hanai family is extended family,
It's supposed to be extended.
That's right. Yeah,
Anyway,
that's the way it used to work, but yeah, so what I did is I as I was researching, I discovered all these wonderful things, and it's funny because I talked to local people, and half of them don't even know where the Battle of Kuamo'o took place. They don't know where it is, and that is the one of the end decision battles that completely changed the whole tapestry of the Hawaiian culture. It ended right there when the royalists routed the traditionalists on that day in May. I mean, in December. And the thing is, after Kamehameha's death in May of 1819, in December, people didn't know what to do. Queen Kaʻamanu was pretty much left in charge, and Liholiho was King Kamehameha II. He was very young, 21 years old, and he'd been trained and brought up in the royal way of life, but he never made any royal decisions. He liked the trappings and all that, but he was not very involved in the day-to-day issues of being royalty. He was more of a playboy and a party guy.
Wasn't really a pig on her.
He was pretty much the beginning of the downfall after Kamehameha the Great's death. And so that's probably why he left Kaʻamanu and Liholiho to be ruling together, because he didn't really trust Liholiho that much, as it turned
I
out.
had an interesting story. It's kind of aligned with that, but I was at the Kamehameha hotel there, and we were doing a big UFO conference there, and it was great because I was doing my workshop, and I was bringing in the higher beings, and Kazekiel and all the other beings came in, and we were like higher in a kite, and they had a big earthquake right at ground zero there. And we come out after doing the workshop, we come out and everybody's outside and they're all like scantily dressed, you know, with toothbrushes in their hand and hair dryers and stuff like that. And they're all freaking out, you know, like it was hilarious. And we all came out and we go, what's going on? What's everybody doing? And they looked at us like we were nuts, like we were crazy. That they go, you didn't feel that? And we go, what? What are you talking about? And we're in such an altered state or frequency that we didn't even notice the quake. We didn't even know what happened.
Well, that where the King Kamehameha Hotel is, that's a very powerful place, because that before, that is where King Kamehameha the Great spent his last 15, 20 years, on that location. And that was his ohana compound, where all of his wives and grandchildren, children, everybody stayed there. And that's where he met with dignitaries and did his business from there. And the Ahuena that you see, it's a relic, it's a replica of what used to be, that's at the point there. And that's where they did all the rituals,
Now, was
for the
he when
death.
they well, they don't really bury him. Did he do the traditional like send him out in the canoe and
No,
flames, or did they hang him, put him up in
nope,
the
none of that.
not that
What they
either?
do is, after all the blessing, when he passed, just imagine there's no hotel there, and it's a hillside, and there's thousands of people standing around. They heard that his health was failing, so they came from all over the islands to be near him. And so all he's surrounded by thousands of Hawaiians, and his ali'i guards are around him like a protective lei, and his chief advisor is there with him, and the people are just waiting. They're just kind of standing there waiting. They know something's going to happen. And then when he passed, it just sent a ripple effect of crying and chanting, and people dropped to the ground and chanted. Others cut locks of their hair off. Others drew sharp knives over their brown skin. But it was just a melee. It just turned into a melee. And in the middle of it is John Young, who is Kamehameha's chief advisor and who taught him how to use weapons in warfare and stuff like that, modern warfare. And he's still holding his friend Kamehameha's hand. And he's just like they're in a little capsule, frozen capsule. Everything around him is just mayhem, you know. And so it was a really amazing, it's an amazing, powerful place there. And that's where he died. And after his death, it was kind of a, you know, do we keep the Kapu system or do we get rid of it? What do we do? Nobody knew what to do, right? And so then in December, they decide to end the Kapu system. And so the traditionalists wanted to keep it the way it always been because it's carried them through thousands of years of living, right? So why change something that's worked for thousands of years? And so the royalists wanted to change that. And so on that December day, warriors came from Hilo, Hamakua, Puna, and Kau to meet at Ka'awaloa, which is the monument, Captain Cook Monument site of Kealakekua Bay. That's Ka'awaloa. And they all met there, and then they made their weapons ready and made their last plans. They marched north to Likelike, and in the area of Likelike is where Kumamo'o battleground is. And when they came over the rise, Kekuaokalani and his warriors came up to the last rise where they could see the ocean. Hundreds of paddlers are paddling, churning up the water, paddling from the north. And that's where they met right there, Kumamo'o. And so the Kahus said their last pulis, their last prayers. They set up their ki'i in the shoreline. Their keys are their little totems of protection, right? And they set those along the shoreline and they backed out. And all of a sudden, here they come. And Captain Francet on the ship Lorraine has 16 cannons on that ship. And that's where Liholiho was on that ship. And they stayed off and let every. There was little smaller cannons mounted on the canoes and stuff like that. And they had muskets and things too. And the traditionalists had some muskets that were. You know, sympathizers hid them away for them, but they're single shot muskets. And once the single shot, it's hand to hand combat. It's too there's too close quarters to reload. Or, hey, give me a second while I reload. And there's bullets winging off of rocks and hitting bodies, and there's cannon fire pelting the hillside. And all of the whole time, the kupuna, the older people, and the children are hiding up in caves in Keaho above. Right. And they can hear the cannon. Boom. They can feel it through the earth. And they're so scared. And Kekuaokalani's wife, Manono, came with him and he tried to talk her out of it. She's a warrior chiefess. And he tried to talk her out of being involved in the war. And in the very end, she, you know, kind of stayed off to the side. But as soon as he fell, she ran to his side and covered his body with his crimson cape and shouted, Awe, Awe, my husband is dead. My husband is dead. And so she picks up his spear and she yells, Koloha, Koloha, Malama Koloha. And she rushes into the battle, you know, and she's cut to pieces instantly by musket fire and extinguishing the fire in her heart forever. And so after the battle, you know, once the traditionalists, I mean, the royalists were, they outgunned the traditionalists, outmanned and outgunned. The traditionalists started bagging, they had to leave, you know, they took off. And so the ones that were too wounded to make the run for their lives were killed on the spot. And the ones that could make it to Pu'u'onua, places of refuge around the island, were safe as long as they stayed in there. And it was hostile. There's no food or water in those places. It's just a place to hide out, but you can't be touched in there. And so then the other ones that couldn't make it were put to death on the spot. And the ones that they caught were rounded up and put in the stockades in Kailua for weeks until the period of forgiveness. And nobody was allowed to go on the battleground. Nobody was allowed to touch any of the bodies. They stayed where they laid. And after the time of forgiveness, they were able to come back, not remove the bodies because that became a sacred place. It's Kapu. Even though the Kapu system was gone, it still reigned, you know, so it's a sacred place. So what they did is they buried their people in rock cairns. And some are big and some are small. The big ones are where more bodies are. And small ones are, of course, where one body was. So you can go there today. And I took James there and I showed him where it was, and you can feel this power. You know, it's a, there's an energy there, and it's not a malevolent energy. It's a kind of a peaceful energy.
It really is. Yeah. I was looking at all the mounds, the rock mounds where everybody was buried, and I was kind of looking over there and tuning into it, and I got this real deep respect. Like, don't go in there. Not like it would be a bad idea, like there'd be like some consequences to it, but I just got this like, no, don't go over there, and you know, just watch it from a distance.
Yeah, just to be observed and just kind of feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just feel the energy.
Yeah.
So
after that, after everybody was buried and that went on, then all of a sudden there's no religion, right? There's no kapu, there's no religion. The Hawaiian people are just like stunned. They don't know where to go, you know, because a thousand years of their history has just been wiped out in a single day. And so that went on. And then all of a sudden, in April of 1820, here comes the first missionaries. And they sailed 18,000 miles from Boston Harbor to Hawaii Island. And they landed first in Kauai High. And they set some of their people off to establish mission schools there. And then the rest of them came down to Kailua. And they had a big meeting there with Liholiho. It lasted hours, you know, and he let them come up. He let them come on shore and do their thing. And then they met again down in Kailua, and the same thing. They were met with Ka'aomanu, Queen Ka'aomanu and her retinue, and the whole, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Hawaiian people came to see what was going on. And the first thing they noticed is that when the ship came in, because they've had ships before since the 1700s, the whalers and stuff like that came, and traders. So they were familiar with the Honomoku, which is the sailors. And so, but the thing they noticed different was when this ship came in, nobody was yelling and going, hey, and all that. Everybody was dressed really severely, and they kept their eyes forward. They didn't look at any of the Hawaiians who paddled out to greet them. They didn't aloha anybody.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't, and then when the Hawaiians paddling out, they went along the length of the ship, and they're like, oh, this is weird, man. Nobody's talking to them. They're not even looking at us. And then two of the delegates, two of the Hawaiian delegates were there, and they were on the, went to school in Connecticut, and they came back to be the principal.
Scoutmasters.
Yeah, scoutmasters. So interpreters. Thank you. Yeah. And so they aloha the people in the canoes, and so they dug their paddles in and turned around. And they were talking, and still the stoic ones were not talking or making eye contact. Then they lowered a ship, lowered a boat. And they all rowed in to shore, and he met Ka'aomanu, and they had a big, long meeting again. And so Liholiho said, okay, you guys can stay, but only for 1 year. So, and that's, they started out as 1 year, and then Ka'aomanu realized that, hey, this is something happening here. This is something, this is a direction for our people to explore, you know? And so maybe we should have them stay longer. And so they ended up staying forever.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, they, you know, first they abolished the hula, then they abolished lua fighting, which is a bone-breaking kung fu. It's Hawaiian kung fu. So they abolished that. Anything that scared them, they abolished it pretty much. And so the Hawaiians still practice their hula, but way off, you know, in the jungles and private places. And they still practice lua fighting, but they incorporated into the hula.
Yeah.
So they could still had it and could practice it, but the missionaries didn't know.
Yeah.
And so here comes one missionary, Matthew Beacon. He's kind of thinking, maybe I'm not here to as much to teach as to learn. And that kind of started putting him at odds with the people, because he's starting to go out on forays alone, which scared him. He's talking to Hawaiian people, which scared his fellow missionaries, because they're going to eat you, you know. And then they just have these awful things about Hawaiian people, right?
Yeah.
And which wasn't true, because the Hawaiian people were extremely advanced people, and they were completely self-sufficient in their farming techniques, and they didn't need anything from the outside, anything. So Matthew Beacon befriends Kainoa, who was a warrior for the traditional side. He's a giant scarred warrior, you know, big dude. And so they kind of, as time goes on, they kind of make friends with each other. And then Kainoa takes him to Kuamo'o and tries to show him, but he couldn't see it. Most people will go there, and if you don't know, if somebody doesn't point it out to you, you probably wouldn't even notice it, because it's a really serrated hillside, and they fought barefoot there.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, it was a rough go. I mean, it was
Jeez, on
intense,
that lava.
really close,
Yeah.
because it's not a big battleground when you go look at it. It's not big. It's not like
No.
Gettysburg or any of these giant sprawling places. It's a serrated hillside, and that's it. And there was no vegetation there at that time either, which there is now. But so they make friends, but Kainoa, he still has the battle going on in his head. It's still raging. And his wife died in the battle too, Leilani. So he lost his wife also, and his whole
Wow, that's interesting.
traditional way of life, right? In that one day. And so he's still bombarded with those feelings, And he turns to Matthew and he says, Why won't I kill you for the same reasons that I killed these people here? Because you have come here to show me your God. Why do you think your God's more powerful than mine's? And so it's a kind of a conundrum that they have. And Matthew says, I've come here to take nothing from you. He says, well, what are you going to leave us then? All the other people that come, they leave us with venereal disease. They take all of our fish, and they leave us with venereal disease that kills thousands of Hawaiian. So what you going to leave us, And he's just like, I don't know. So,
Yeah.
so then they kind of come to an understanding, and Kainoa teaches Matthew about the Hawaiian life, and Matthew teaches Kainoa how to speak more proper English, and as it goes along, he does, and they start understanding each other, and so it just goes on and on, until generations. And then they meet, Matthew goes on a hike up the mountain, and runs into the night marchers, the whole Hoikai Po, and
Yeah.
he's only saved by a woman who feels his energy, right, and thinks that he is good in his heart. He has aloha in his heart. And so she saves him. She calls off the night marches, and they switch direction and go around him. But he's because he's just found out his wife has died too, and while he was away, and that makes it even worse. So
Yeah.
he's up there kind of in mourning. And then these boys come up, these young Hawaiian boys come up to hunt pig, and they see him out there in the clearing. And he's all in black, and he looks like a black rock because he's all hunched up, and he's crying, and he's really sad, and so they don't know who he is, and they poke him with their spears, and make ha-ka-ka, make trouble with him. But then he kind of scares them, so they take off, and later Kainoa finds out what they did, and he says, where is he? And they tell him where they saw him. He goes up and carries him on his shoulder back down to their camp in Napapo, and when he takes off his shirt, he sees all their puncture. And he gets really mad at those boys, and because this is a good man here,
Yeah.
and they're not all Haole people are like this, and the word Haole is it's been bastardized to become a slang now,
Yeah.
but before, the Hawaiians called people Haole, which means how Haole, which means no breath, Haole means
Okay.
ha ole.
Because
Ole is no,
they
stop,
didn't share the
ha. No,
breath
because they
or
handshake,
yeah, the
right? And
handshake, yeah.
Hawaiians, they greet each other, forehead,
And breathe.
exchange breath, and then they hug. Yeah, that's ha.
Yeah.
Exchanging the breath of life is what it is.
Yeah.
And that's part of aloha. Aloha is so much deeper than hello and goodbye. It's a prayer to the gods above and the gods below, and to the breath of life, the ha. Yeah. Aloha.
What's really interesting when you said Leilani, it really piqued my curiosity because just down the road there's a street called Leilani,
Yeah.
and we didn't even know that. And we're in here doing some energy work and counseling work, and this being came in named Leilani, and
Oh.
I'm going, Leilani, who is Leilani? And I didn't know who she was. And so we started looking into it, and she's in the sixth dimension now. She's way up there.
Whoa.
She's like a goddess energy now, and way up there. And she was coming in, and I go, Leilani, I don't know why that seems familiar. And we go to the hardware store, I look over and I see this street,
Oh,
Leilani.
yeah, right.
And she said she's like the protector, the goddess of this area,
Could be.
which is really
Could
interesting.
very
I
well
don't know
be.
how far her area extends,
Yeah, I'm not sure.
but she said she's kind of like an overseer and helps
Yeah,
people here.
yeah.
And so she's still working, doing
But I kind of skipped
her thing.
Kamehameha's death, because you asked me
Yeah, what they do
what
with
they
his
do.
body.
Okay, so what they do is the kahus, they give their last prayers and everything, and so they go back in and they make a new Lono tower, and what that is there's a fire pit in there, and they take Kamehameha's body in and they burn the flesh off his body, off the bones, because the mana is in the bones, not in the flesh, and they offer the flesh and all that, everything that entails that, to the gods of the water, to Mano the shark or whatever. And so they take his bones and they strap him up so he's in a kneeling position with his knees under his chin, and they tie him that way, and then they put him in a sennit, hand-woven sennit basket, and they have shell eyes for his eyes. Yeah. And then they took him off into a cave somewhere and buried him
Oh,
in the
okay.
cave. So nobody knows where that is, because the people who took him
That's
there fell
good.
off the cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Or
but that's what happened.
they're
That's
gonna
what they
push off
did.
the
Yeah,
cliff.
that's how
No.
they buried Ali'i
Yeah.
in that manner, because the mana is in the bones, not in the flesh. Yeah, so
Interesting.
kind of got by that, but
Yeah, I was wondering. I've seen that traditional burial
yeah.
way, but I was wondering if they put him up like a lot of Native Americans will just put you up on a they build a platform and they'll just put you on there and let the buzzards,
Oh, you
you
mean the
know,
Indians? Yeah.
Native
Yeah.
American the Indians do that, or the other tradition is to, you know, put you in a canoe and torch you and push you
Yeah.
out in the
Yeah,
ocean,
that's a Viking way.
the Viking way. I think
Yeah.
they did it to oh God, brain farting. What's his name? The singer, the big guy. Is he
Oh, Israel, come on, don't you
Israel?
go old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't they torch him? I thought they did. They put him in the canoe and
No, they
torch
had a
him.
big they had a big memorial service off for the water, but they didn't torch him, they buried
Oh, did
him.
they? Oh, okay.
He's a great guy.
I'd like to be
He's a real
torched myself.
yeah.
Know, you feel his energy. You
Yeah.
feel. I had this guy come here, and he was a truck driver, and for towing, he would tow trucks. And we had all these vehicles abandoned here, and we
Yeah.
were getting rid of them. And it's kind of a thing here. We live off of Dodgeball Highway, and
Yeah, boy.
there we call them accidents. You know, there's people just going off the road constantly here, and just
Everybody's in a
crazy.
hurry
Yeah, and there's
nowadays.
cars all up and down in the jungle everywhere, but. We had two trucks we had to get rid of here, and there's another car that the jungle ate. Oh, you can't even tell what kind of
There's
car
a
it is.
couple still in
Looks like a
there.
Mercedes almost. I don't know what it is, but it's
There's a
probably an
few
engine
in
in there
there.
somewhere. But anyway, the make a long story short, this guy comes out, man. He's this big wine guy, really,
Yeah.
but he's got this big grin, you know, this
Oh
big
yeah.
grin on his face, and I go, "How you doing?" like this, and I started talking to him. And we start talking about UFOs and everything. He goes, "Yeah, I've seen them, you know, like this." And I showed him the video of these massive ships coming over here. He was all excited about that. And I go, "Your ancestors, you know, if you talk the now, here's one thing. Now, one guy says you refer to them as Hunas, and another guy says Kahuna, and I don't know what the proper because you know once white people get a hold of stories, they change, they correct each other, and they try to be, you know,
Yeah,
how
so
that
like
works."
whisper here and then
Yeah, yeah,
dude, it's the
yeah.
same at the other
So
end.
I'm
Yeah.
not sure what how you refer to them anymore, but
Yeah.
the ancient ones, the elders, but they would point to the Pleiades, and they said that's where we came from. We came from the Pleiades,
Oh.
and from Pleiades they came and they started the ancient Lyrians were actually the first colonies that came here, which were the Anunnaki that they call about. The second colonies that came here were the Pleiadians, and they created Atlantis and Lemuria. And they started in Australia and Africa, and then from Africa they came out to the other islands and things like that. So when you talk to the elders, they said, "Yeah, we went from Africa, but we originated from the stars." You know, and they point at the Pleiades, which is really interesting.
No.
And so it's sad because the Kahunas I knew really well, I thought were really good friends. That they've all died, you know, that they're just, I don't know what happened.
It happens when you get old.
Nahi and Antioch and all these people, they're
Yeah.
just like
Yeah.
one year they're here and we're hanging out, and next year I come back and everybody's gone.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad, but Hopefully their families will carry on in their traditions or something. But I kind of miss them. I miss the story,
Oh
the
yeah,
story
it's
time
great
and
stories.
talk
Great
story
story.
and all
Yep,
that
talk
stuff.
story. Yeah.
And really, that's what I'm hoping to do is get some people on the show that have, like you
Yeah.
know, that have the old stories
Yeah.
and talk about the tradition here. I know the I'm not sure how they measured the land here, but it usually went from the sea to the mountains, and they'd have a
Ahupua'a.
strip.
It's an Ahupua'a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, that was so smart because, I mean, as you go up higher, certain fruits and things are going off, you
Yeah.
know? And then you come down, you come down and you have a whole variety of fruits and vegetables and
Yeah.
berries and everything else you need. And then you get to the ocean, you got the fish, you know, so you got the fish and the pigs and the berries and the avos and all the other stuff
Well,
here.
that's how it worked because
Yeah.
the farmers in the upper part of the Ahupua'a would trade with the ones down in the bottom. So
Yeah.
each section of Ahupua'a was completely self-sufficient, and they were self-sufficient in themselves, and they traded with the Ahupua'a next to them. Ahupua'a means pig's head cairn. Ahu is a cairn, and pua'a is pig.
Yeah.
So that's what they used to do, is put the pig's head on top of the cairn, and that marked their Ahupua'a. That's how it came about.
Now, Karen is just like a rock structure,
Yeah, a rock
like a
structure.
tower,
Yeah,
like a
yeah,
rock
yeah.
tower.
Like when you're hiking out in the desert or something, you see these little rock cairns to mark the
Yeah,
trail. That's
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
God, we're getting close to the end of the hour. We've got so many things going on here. I wanted to show people your book. Hopefully you guys can see that.
Yeah.
It's got the traditional
Tea leaf. I mean,
tea
taro
leaf,
leaf,
taro leaf
which
down there.
represents family, and this also represents
Yeah,
family.
it's Malama Ko Aloha, right?
Keep your love. Yes.
And they can get that on Amazon. We'll put a link
Yep. Amazon
to
Books. We'll
the
put a link on there, and yeah, it's fun. We talk about Pele. We meet Pele in there. Kaumanu marches across the islands, calling people in because she's a Christian now, and she's accepted the Christian God, and so she is wants to confront Pele. So she hikes there with a bunch of people and confronts several priests on the way who try to talk her out of it because she hasn't made any sacrifices, no offerings. She's just coming there, and the last priest who tried to stop her, Heva Heva, was the priest to the first in line to Pele, and he started talking to her in the ancient dialect of Pele. So Kapi'olani listened, and then when he was done, she recited stuff from her primer, her little notebook, her little Christian notebook,
Yeah.
and it blew the guy away, and he just stepped aside, and they continued on, and then they come up a southern trail, which is maybe still there. It's very hard to find, and they come up that path into the caldera, and half the people stop. They go, "We can't go any farther. It's too dangerous." And there's explosions and sulfur gases all over the place, and it's just erupting like crazy. And she keeps going on with only a few. And Mr. Goodrich, who is a preacher, he hiked barefoot from Hilo to join her there, and he stayed with her. He went with her down into there, and she confronted Pele and said that Jehovah is the new God now, and you're not anymore. We're not going to honor you anymore. And that was just the end. I mean, it just kept going, ending and ending the
Yeah.
Hawaiian way of life over and over. And pretty soon the missionaries wanted to be good landowners, and that happened. And then the sugar cane came, and the price of the book is $18.88, and I picked that price because that is a date of the first attempted coup made by the sugar barons to overthrow King Kalakaua from the throne. See, so that's
Yeah.
why.
Yeah, there's so much spirit in this book. It's like amazing. But it's
So,
good to know. I think
yeah,
everything's kind of blending now.
yeah,
I like Yahweh and Yeshua myself.
yeah, yeah,
Jehovah is the wrathful
yeah.
God. It's a whole
I've
nother
had
story.
many conversations
Yeah,
with the
yeah, yeah.
witnesses, but.
Yeah. They go, "Do you believe in heaven on earth?" And I said, "Have you looked around?"
Yeah.
It's a state of consciousness.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, on that note, I don't know, would you be up for doing a chant, one of your to end with, or
I
is that?
don't have any with me.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
have any off the top of my head,
Well,
but
that's all right. I
I would
thought
love
that.
to.
Yeah, we'll do it next time. We'll have you on again, and we'll do
That'd
some
be great.
more of the powerful chants when you do these. You just go, whoa,
Yeah,
you
we did
could
a
do it.
video at Kumo with a chant to honor Monono and so on.
Nice.
So that's what the book's about. It's about Hawaiian history.
Yeah.
And
Anyway, yeah, we'll have the link at the bottom. And so we're signing off now. So anyway, just keep an open mind, loving heart, pure intent, and have a great evening.
thanks for having me,
All
James.
right. Good night.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.